From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. I'm not entirely sure which came first for writer and radio producer Starlee Kine. The idea of doing a radio show where she solves mysteries, or the mystery itself, something she had heard about and wanted to solve. I think the mystery came first, and then the show. And at first, she wasn't sure exactly what it would be like, though she knew she didn't want to do a storytelling show or an interview show. She knew she craved mystery, and that the show should be about getting to a solution, but also the process of getting there, the steps that lead from one thing to another and the people you talk to along the way. Well, now she has a show. It's a podcast called Mystery Show, and today in the program we're talking about it. Starlee has decided to devote her life to unraveling mysteries, big and small. And she'll join us after the news.
Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. Our online audio and podcasts are made possible by KUER and its listeners. If you like Radio West, help us make it happen. You can donate $10 right now by texting KUER to 85944. That's KUER to 85944. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In the very first episode of her podcast Mystery Show, Starlee Kine tells the story of when she was a kid, and she and her sister spent an afternoon trying to crack an old safe in their grandparents' garage. Starlee says her grandmother couldn't remember what was in the safe, but she says that she and her sister were sure there was something valuable inside. And it started to get late, and nothing seemed to be working.
Finally, our grandmother came out waving a scrap of paper. She'd found the combination. With pounding hearts, my sister and I took turns rotating the dial. First, I did a number, then her, and then back to me. Our whole lives were about to change. Our mom would come searching for us, and we'd have to say, "Mom, Mom, we're right here. You just don't recognize us now that we have all the answers." We reached the end of the paper. Together, we grabbed hold of the handle and turned. We could barely breathe. We felt the lock catch. We peered inside and saw nothing. Nothing. Not one single thing. Someone had gotten there first.
But, as she tells us, never again. Now she has a show where she can get to the mystery first. And the concept is simple enough. Starlee has a client. Sometimes it's a friend, sometimes not. And this person has a mystery in their life. She'll take the case if it's a mystery you couldn't just solve on the internet and if it really matters to the person. Today in the program, we're talking to Starlee Kine about her show and the things she's learning about mysteries and people and radio, stuff like that. You can join us if you like. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Starlee Kine has produced radio pieces for This American Life and for Wiretap. She's told stories on The Moth Radio Hour. The first season of Mystery Show's just wrapped up, and she's joining us today from the studios of NPR in New York City. And Starlee Kine, welcome. Thanks for doing this.
Hi.
I want to start... Can we start with Columbo?
Yeah. I mean, it's all I ever want to do is start with Columbo.
Right. So you had a thing about the TV show Columbo when you were a kid. Like, and it was a huge inspiration. And like I even read you described it as kind of a frame of reference for not only – for I guess this for the show in some way.
Oh, I mean I've been asked a lot about who – like, I guess my detective role model would be if I had one for this show, and it's Columbo. Like, I feel like Columbo, I've gravitated toward Columbo as my entire life, and now I get to, pay him proper respect, hopefully.
But why Columbo? Because it seems like on one hand, it's the mystery part, obviously, of the show, but it's kind of like the conceit of the show itself is sort of like the show that you've created, which is kind of unexpected. It's original. It's different. Is that part of it?
For Columbo? Yeah. I mean, I feel like with Columbo, Columbo has like six episodes a season.
Right.
First of all, it's got these like short Gutty Short seasons, and each episode is like almost movie length. Like they're like 75-minute, 80-minute episodes. And you know, like in Columbo, it's really all about the conversations that he has because he knows who did it from the very beginning,
right.
Which is different than my show. Like I don't know the answer, but he knows who did it, so the entire episode is spent with him having to talk to people, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it's like it's these really long conversations he has. Like I've been watching the episodes since I've been doing the show. I mean, I watch them all the time. but I've been watching them again. Yeah. I really do. They're very comforting. And I love, you know, they're on Columbo's on Netflix. Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that. I'm glad I know that now, actually, though.
Yeah. And I feel like when Columbo first came on Netflix, I could tell who was a Columbo fan because I would have friends. There was a period where I feel like a bunch of people I know were watching it at the same time. Yeah. So it felt like Columbo was on TV again.
Right.
Because it had just hit Netflix. But what's amazing is like the scenes are so long in Columbo.
Yeah.
Like it really feels like you're watching a conversation happen. And I find that really. I relate to that. And also just his general rumpledness, yeah. I feel a kinship towards.
And he's kind. I mean, that seems to be sort of your character, too. I mean, really just interested in people.
He is kind. I mean, sometimes he uses it.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, it's a trick with him, right? Because he's making people. Well, I guess he's always kind, but his trick is more that he thinks that he's supposed to be hapless.
Yeah.
When actually he's like paying attention to everything. And he gets people to open up to him, even when they don't expect they're going to.
So,
but he is like, I feel like he always feels, you can always tell when Columbo is upset about, like more upset about the person having done it than others. You know, like there's definitely people he likes more than others.
Right.
And there's an episode with Johnny Cash. Where Johnny Cash is the killer. And
wait, there's an episode with Johnny Cash?
Yeah, it's amazing.
So
it is such a soulful episode.
Wow.
And they have such a bond, the two of them. And obviously Columbo knows it's him that Johnny Cash did it the whole time. And it's just this really, it's great. He seems so, it's so heavy. You can see how heavy-hearted he is about taking Johnny Cash in.
And then there's the Vincent Price one, too, which is
yeah, well, there's several Vincent Price, and then there's well the
cooking one.
Well, yeah, I realized that I had called it Vincent Price the other day, but actually it's Martin Landau.
Oh, okay.
I feel like young
I did hear
Martin
you talk
Landau.
About this.
Yeah, young Martin Landau and young Vincent Price, I feel get very they actually look very similar.
Yeah.
I'm sure Vincent Price is all over Columbo, but there's a Martin Landau episode where Martin Landau's actually a twin. There's two of him, but one of them, the character who is the killer, hosts a cooking show, and Columbo, he kind of like tricks Columbo. He wants to stop Columbo from interrogating him, and so he has Columbo suddenly on the cooking show, and it's this really long segment where all you're doing is watching Martin Landau and Peter Falk mix the ingredients. And
yeah.
Like Peter and Columbo's character is really, he's really nervous about the camera. So he's speechless. He doesn't speak in the entire scene. He just Martin Landau keeps asking him questions and then Columbo keeps going, Like, and he doesn't say words. And the whole time he's just separating the egg yolk from the egg whites.
Right.
And it's so long and it's so amazing. And I felt like I could have watched it all day. And like, that just doesn't, those scenes don't happen.
Yeah. Not anymore, right?
And, well, I don't even know then. I don't know if this was ever, it seems like such a weird little fluke that it was allowed. Like, the episodes are really long, and there's many, many more scenes like that.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like just like, it's action-packed, and then they take 5 minutes to do this long scene. It's
but wait.
Every
but,
scene.
So were you thinking about, like, when you started to think about this show, did you actually think about, like, oh, I remember one of the things that I think was so cool about Columbo was the fact that they really took time in these scenes and they really kind of meandered, but even though they were headed some way. I mean, did you actually consciously think of that, like, in the beginning days of Mystery Show?
I did, actually, because – and not even, like, meandering as much as, like – because it's, again, that – it's like, about the passage of time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I like how in Columbo you feel like you're – experiencing time.
Yeah.
Like it's not, it doesn't feel like they're just killing time. It doesn't feel like, it feels like you're really living with these characters by watching that happen. And I actually, the scene I was thinking of when I was doing the show, there's one of the Columbo episodes, the whole opening, because there's these cold opens that are like 15, 20 minutes long before you meet Columbo.
Wow.
And one of them, there's like the killer, she gets a phone call. And she just takes so long to cross from one end of her apartment to the other to pick up the phone. And it's such a small moment, but it actually like really struck me because I feel like you feel like, oh, you're in it, and and time is passing as you watch her do it. And I did think about that when I was starting Mystery Show. Like, I was really into the concept of how to show time.
Yeah.
Like how to feel time, how to make the listener feel like time is passing.
And what have you figured out? I mean, there's this beautiful moment where you talk about, where you tell us to kind of imagine calendar pages falling.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you can do it in writing, like in the narration too.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess there are other ways of doing it. But I mean, because it's a challenge in radio, I mean, you've got to find a way to do it because we can't see anything.
Yeah, I know. But that's what I realized, though. I was like, actually, I realized, why aren't we doing this all the time?
Yeah.
Because that's what I guess that's what I'm starting to realize is the space is wider in radio than I had realized.
Yeah.
You know, and pacing is really important because sometimes you want things to be really fast, and that's what editing is. Like,
yeah.
Editing is like getting the pacing just right. But I also realized, I just wanted, and it kind of changes depending on the episode, and I wanted each episode to have its own pace and flow and rhythm to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, in the Belt Buckle episode, which all takes place in the Southwest, like, I wanted that to feel more spacious,
mm-hmm.
And sprawling. And so, like, so one of the ways I hopefully show time is just, like, I try to let the music hang in there longer.
Yeah.
You know? I try to make the posts longer, and I try to, I try to let it breathe when it seems like that should be happening. And then there's other episodes, like, not to give a spoiler away, but like in the Source Code episode, the whole end part, which I won't get it, like that's purposely supposed to feel fast and kind of like a carnival, you know
yeah.
what I mean? Or like a madcap. It's supposed
yeah.
to feel madcap, and so that's it changes depending on what's happening in the stories.
I guess we can say that it features. We won't say anymore. Mm-hmm. I do not want to
yeah.
give away any spoilers because I know there are a lot
spoiler.
Of people. It's a total.
That's a spoiler.
No, should I not say it? I'm not going to say it.
No. All right. Well, it's up to you if you want. I mean, yeah,
no,
I mean, that's
no,
definitely
no.
a spoiler.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to. Well, I want to actually want to play a clip from the
yeah.
from the pilot from the first show.
Okay.
And this was something. This is you had done this a couple of years ago, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And this is your friend Laura, and it's a really simple premise. I mean, she rents this movie in Tribeca, this in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And she rents the movie one day, and she goes back the next day to return the movie, and the place is gone. And that's the mystery.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's this – so you're on the case, and you go out, and you go looking for – to find out what had happened to the place. And then you have this moment. I want to play this moment. This is in a bar called Walker's. It's this old – as you describe it, kind of an old bar, but not too divey, and it's really packed when you're there. And you get talking to the waitress there, Linda.
Mm-hmm.
And Linda is asking some of the people around whether they know anything about the video shop. And this is what happens.
Tom, what was the name of the original video store down on Greenwich?
What was the name of it? I was a member.
Remember the old man who worked there with Miss Two Fingers?
You know, I saw Madonna in there once.
You saw Madonna
in there
once.
I'll think of the name in a second. What was it called? But I was a member. I mean, I was, you know, I've been here 30 years, so. They had good foreign films, which I like, you know.
What's your favorite foreign film?
La Strada. I don't know. It was a very touching film for me. Because I identify with the character Zampanot. I know he was a bad guy, but I thought that love affair with Jessamina, you know, he saw the light, but it was too late. The last scene of him crying on the beach, you know, it was so sad.
Do you relate to that part, like seeing the light too late?
Oh. You know, I put the shell around me and I'm living with it. I put walls in front of me. It's not good, but that's the way I've been.
Do you have kids?
No. No. I never married. Close a few times, but the last time was probably about 20 years ago, 92, yeah. She was a few years older than me, and she didn't want to have kids, and my whole point of marriage, why do you get married unless you're going to have kids, you know? So, believe me, I'm lamenting.
Like La Strada.
Yeah. That's true.
It's never too late to knock those walls down.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that film hundreds of times, and I have it on tape.
You watch it a lot?
I might watch it tonight, actually. The hell is the name of that video store?
So, Starley, so what was it about, because you've talked about this, about like that moment was really, it seems like it was really important in terms of the development of the show. Like it made you, I don't know, like really want to do the show. I mean, there was something about that exchange?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even now when I'm listening to it, like I never get tired of listening to it. Like I just, I love that guy. It was something, so a lot of the pilot I made a few years ago, like I was trying to figure out, I kind of had this idea for the show, and then I was trying to figure out how to do it, and I didn't know what it was going to be, and I didn't even know if I was going to want to do it, you know, because I just never had wanted to do my own show before this, because I couldn't. I like when I have an idea that appeals to me, and until that idea comes, like I just can't get interested. Or follow through. And so, and this was the first time I had an idea and I was just like, this, like I wasn't getting tired of it in my head. And then, but I didn't know how to do it and it seemed very daunting. And then I went out and, it was hard. Like, you know, I was like looking for this store and like no one knew where it was, and I wasn't, and the show was so, it didn't exist, so like before you've made something, everything, when it's in that shapeless state,
yeah.
It's really fatiguing, you know, you're just like, you have to will something to existence. And then I feel like I went into Walker's, and I met that guy, and like, as I was talking to him, it just felt like, it made sense, like, I could tell in the moment, like, I feel like you can, when you get tape that you're, like, I feel like you know when you get the tape you're going to use. Mm-hmm. And I could tell hear the tape as he was talking to me, and I just was really present in the conversation with him, and it just all kind of fell into place in that moment. And I feel like I've never, I don't know, like, again, like when I was listening to it right now, it's still, like, I remember that feeling of talking to him, and I remember that feeling of being like, oh, this is something that I think I want to do.
Yeah.
It, like, brings it back.
Well, but one of the things you've said, though, you've talked about is, like, people talk about sometimes, and there are these stories that you'll hear on your way to a mystery, and sometimes people mm-hmm. describe them as digressions, but that's not mm-hmm. really what they are.
Or tangents.
Or tangents,
yeah.
Or whether, like, but that's,
yeah.
But like Tommy talking about Fellini wasn't just a kind of a lovely story that, and then you move on and find out, you know, what happens to the video store. Like, it was crucial to the bigger picture, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to me, Yeah, that's the thing. It wasn't just like, oh, people have stories to tell.
Yes.
That's the idea. It, you know what I mean? It wasn't that. It was like, I really like when things connect. And to me, what he was saying, like, then I go on to talk about Fellini and how Fellini made this documentary and how Fellini's whole thing was about, like, Fellini, like, reality wasn't real enough to Fellini. It was only once he made his own version of reality. Like, in this documentary about him, it said that he had this, like, memory of the sea from his childhood. But then when he, like, tried to film the real sea, it wasn't real.
Yeah.
You know, he had to make the sea, and then that was real. And, like, this whole story is about, like, Laura's memories and what is real and what – she has this whole thing about a harp light that she talks about, and the whole Fellini documentary is I'm a Born Liar. Like, to me – it all connects, and that's what I mean when it all fell into place when I was talking to him. Like, I was, the thing about mysteries, I've always liked mysteries, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what frustrates me about mysteries, the two things that frustrate me is either when you think you I guess there's three things. When you think they're going to solve it and then they don't, right? They lead you to believe they are. I don't mind if mysteries don't get solved, but I don't like it when it's like it totally looks like it's headed that way and then they don't.
Yeah.
Or I don't like – and I don't like when there's a solution that is so out of – so absurd because it's just the least likely scenario, you know?
Right.
Like it's totally ridiculous and then you're like, well, that's just – then it ruins the whole thing that came before. But I feel like with a lot of mysteries, what happens is it's all about the solution, right? And all you're getting towards is the solution until you get so nervous about what the resolve is going to be because it's all resting on that.
Yeah, it's a huge burden.
It's a huge burden, yeah. And then you're disappointed. And then I feel like with a lot of mysteries, it's like they're going through the motions of the beats you have to hit in order to get to that solution. Mm-hmm. So there's like red herrings everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Like they'll interview someone and then it's not that person and then you interview someone else and maybe it's that person but they don't know it yet and then they come back. But it's like they're not making the red herrings interesting. It's just being like this is the beats that you do of a mystery. And so for me, it was like talking to Tom was like interviewing a witness, you know, or someone who is a key part of this mystery. And it just – but instead of it being like a throwaway moment or something that's like, oh, he doesn't know it though, so never mind, it was like that is as important as what happens in the end. And he connects.
Yeah, yeah. There's another really good example of that from case number two, Brittany. Mm-hmm. And I want to play another – and this is a moment that a lot of people actually talk about when they talk about this show. It's this – okay, so will you give us the setup for the Brittany again, we won't give case. Anything away, but give us the kind of the setup for the case.
Okay, so the setup for the case is my friend Andrea Siegel wrote a book that tanked. Right. Like no – it was a novel. No one read it. It didn't sell well. She never saw anyone reading it. She never heard of anyone reading it. And 2 years after the book came out, she had a Google alert on her name. And so she checked, and it was a picture from People magazine of Britney Spears out to dinner with her parents for her mom's birthday, holding her cigarettes and her lighter and her cell phone and Andrea's book.
Right.
This book that no one had ever read and had no – and Andrea had no evidence of anyone reading except for now Britney Spears. And so she wanted to – her question was – her mystery was how did this happen and did Brittany read her book and did she like it?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So so there's this moment in this case, in this show, mm-hmm. Where you have a conversation with the guy at Ticketmaster. Dennis is the name he tells you, although I'm sure it's probably not his real name.
You don't think so?
I don't know. What do you think?
I think it is. I think it's his real name. I mean, he didn't say his last name. But yeah, I think it is his real name.
Oh, okay, good. All right, good.
Yeah.
I just say that because I had a conversation with Comcast with two different Thomases, and I asked them if that was actually their name. And they said, no, we have an alias. So I wondered.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you? Oh, maybe.
Who knows? Doesn't matter. Well,
yeah.
Although I like the idea that it's Dennis, right? I mean, I actually do like that idea. And so.
Yeah.
Anyway, this exchange, we're going to play a little excerpt from this exchange. It's a longer conversation, but so set it up for us because it starts to get really personal in a beautiful way. I think most everyone agrees. But what you're trying to get from him originally is just you want to know how much time you're going to be able to spend with Brittany if you spend money on these tickets because you want to ask her the question, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a meet and greet with Brittany that I'm trying to decide if I should go to. Or I guess I've already I'm going to it, but it's and the meet and greet costs $2,500. So like I just want to make sure that when I go there that I actually get to talk to her. And for how long I get to, you know that I get enough time to be able to talk to her and ask her the question.
So Dennis isn't – I won't say too much about it. He's not entirely sure about it. But you get into this conversation and it – well, as I said, it gets really personal here. Let's play an excerpt from it.
I mean, when I was younger, I got in a lot of trouble. You have to be the kind of person that you would want someone to be attracted to.
That's true. Because if you're not –
even if that person's attracted to you at first, if you don't believe that you're worthy of that person, they're not going to stay interested.
That's my problem right there in inertia.
You don't think you're worthy?
In a sense, no.
You are. You have to believe that.
Yeah, but I've made a lot of mistakes, too.
Who hasn't? I think you think you're not going to get happiness, and so the only way you're going to be able to feel stuff is if it's sad stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You can get addicted to a certain kind of sadness. And what about you?
What about me?
What about you? You don't have any of those problems?
I do have those problems. That's why I'm able to talk about it, because I feel like I can relate. There's plenty of times I don't feel worthy, and I say mean things to myself, and I lose perspective, and I get depressed, and I totally understand. Mm. Everyone does, and that's why you have to start little bits telling yourself, I am worthy, I do deserve that, I'm just as good as the other person who's getting it. And so you just have to, like, trick yourself.
It's like subliminal messages to yourself.
Yeah. Act as though there's, like, commercials flashing at you that just keep being broadcast.
I mean, you're awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you realize when you were having the conversation, like you did with Tommy in the Fellini story, that what he was talking about totally connected with the story?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%.
Really?
Like, even more so. I would, yeah. I mean, it wasn't... It was a very special conversation, and I felt, I've never been more sure of something connecting in any story ever. Like, I was, 100%.
So, like, I was thinking about, like, what is the connector? Because I thought a lot about this, and I guess it's the thing that, so Brittany is, you know, you've talked about her as having this kind of sadness, but this humanity, and yet, mm-hmm. and that it brings things out of people like Dennis. Like, she's mm-hmm. this mirror, or she's this reflection, and people are willing to talk when you talk about Brittany. That's the thing, right? That's the connector.
I do, yeah, and I think it is interesting, because, like, everyone who I spoke to about Brittany got to a real place immediately. Hmm. You know, like, and she would just be the little springboard. And it did seem to open up people. Like, it was this kind of question. And I feel like people, everyone has an opinion about her. And there's a tinge of sadness about her, you know, mm-hmm. that everyone seems to realize. Even if, like, they're not, like, a fan of hers or something. Like, no one's just like, oh, her. And even, you know, in that when I talk to him, I say to feel stuff, and I didn't realize it at the time. And, you know, then that's the name of Andrea's book.
Right.
And I didn't even realize it. Like, I felt like it was, like, everything that Andrea was wondering about why Brittany might have gone to her book, I feel like Andrea's book is called To Feel Stuff, and Dennis is all about feeling stuff,
right.
You know? And the fact that I just called up and then all those feelings just spilled out, I feel like, is what Andrea was trying to go for, which is why Brittany was probably drawn to Andrea's book. Like, I just it all ties together. And, like, there's just this thing too where, you know, like, I paid $2,500 to go to see Britney Spears,
right.
And this is the guy who answers the questions about those VIP tickets. People call him all day asking about those tickets. And beyond the connections of how I think, like, what he says connects with Brittany and stuff like that, I also feel like I wanted a balance. Mm-hmm. Like, it restores a balance to me where the conversation with him should have as much time as anything about Britney Spears, right? Like, I wanted people who were like, I never thought I'd care about Britney Spears to say, oh, my God, I care about Britney Spears. But I also wanted people to say, like, I never thought I'd care about a Ticketmaster guy to, like, say they now care. And I wanted both of it. I do want people to care about Britney as well. But there's something about, you know, this meet and greet, without giving away an answer, like, in general, meet and greets take, like, very short period of time, like seconds sometimes, or like a minute, right? And so the fact that you pay all this money to get such a short period of time made me feel like I wanted to put more time into a conversation with the person who has to field calls about those meet and greets all the time. And I like how long he is.
Yeah.
And I also like how, you know, there's like hold music, and I like that you're on hold when you call customer service, and then like that's the other thing about time. Like, so you wait a long time to talk to these people, and then you want to get off the phone really fast. And I like the idea of taking my time and making it a whole segment.
Starlee Kine is with us. Her podcast is called Mystery Show, and she just finished her first season. But we have links to it on our website. You should go listen if you haven't yet. It's on the Gimlet website. We'll give you the details at radiowest.kuer.org. And we'll take a quick break and be back in a minute. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today on the program, Starlee Kine is with us. We're talking about her podcast, which is great, called Mystery Show. She just wrapped up her first season, and we have details. If you haven't heard it yet, on our website, radiowest.kuer.org, she's joining us from the studios of NPR in New York City. So I know you've talked about when you were sort of thinking about what you wanted for the show. Mm-hmm. You knew you didn't want to do... You know, you didn't. I think you put it this way. You didn't want this sort of fake This American Life show. You didn't want a storytelling show. You weren't really interested in that. I mean, it's sort of, and it's being done well, but it's been done. You didn't really want an interview show. That wasn't really your thing.
Well, yeah, and This American Life. I mean, I just feel like This American Life does it so well that I didn't want. It just wouldn't. Like, why do another? Like, because that would be too similar, and they would do it better.
But it's interesting. I mean, you told our producer Benjamin that there was this moment when, I mean, it's like you were so intent in not doing a This American Life that there was this moment when Alex Blumberg, who's of course the founder of Gimlet Media, former This American Life producer and NPR producer, he tells you, this is the story, I wanted you to talk about this. So I guess he tells you to sort of put this pause in one of the one of the pieces, and you were like, I don't want to do that. That sounds too much like This American Life.
Well, I mean, I feel like I keep over and over saying, no, that sounds like that's This American Life way, that's This American Life way. And I feel like Alex is always like this will, that line comes up a lot, and then he'll like, and I can see he's now used to it, I think. Right. But this particular moment, he... It was in the most recent episode. We were kind of going through the episode, you put pauses in, you like take out breaths and you put pauses in, and it's like a whole process. And a lot of times, just if you put a standard pause, it's just because like if you take like a big gulp of air, you want to like put a pause instead of that.
Right.
But there's also ways to put pauses that have, you know, for effect.
Yeah.
And this was a moment where I was saying something, and like mid-sentence, he was like, let's put a pause in there, right? It was like separating the sentence. And the effect it had on the sentence was so stark to me. Like it went from making it took the detectiveness out of it.
Hmm.
And it made it sound like an end. It wasn't the end of it wasn't even the end of the segment, and it made it sound it was just like too meaningful,
right?
And it stepped on it, and it was just a pause. It was it just like just a pause, and then I was like, it was like he put it in, and I felt like I had a reaction to it, like something didn't take, and then we took it out, and I was like, yeah, that's the difference between like Mystery Show and This American Life,
right?
This American Life, by the way, uses pauses very well, but
yeah,
it didn't fit. It was like it felt like a. It didn't work.
So, but your process, I mean, it sounds like you're pretty fastidious when you're cutting. I mean, you're really, you're crafting, you're very particular, it seems like.
Yeah, I'm like, yes. I feel like every single second is gone over and probably edited in some way. Not every second, but it is, I mean, really, really very finely tuned. And I feel like hopefully people don't notice because it's, I don't know, it's like wearing makeup, like you wear makeup best when people don't see it, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's really, and I actually didn't realize it. I didn't realize I was like this until doing Mystery Show. Hmm. And like, I now know how much I care about these certain details since working on it.
Is it because you're a writer? Like you want control?
It's weird because I'm learning a lot about myself when it comes to control with working on this show. I guess so. I don't know if it's because I'm a writer. I think I just really like details. And I'm not like a because it kind of goes against my nature otherwise. Like I'm not super detail oriented about anything else. It's just what I'm working on. And I just feel like all the little details do matter so much. And once you start thinking that way, it's hard to – you can't let anything go. Like you can't like start like going over a part and putting pauses in and moving things around and then be like, oh, the rest of it, don't worry about it. Like you kind of – it's really all or nothing, I feel.
I mean, because I read this interview where you had talked – when you were you thought about for a while anyway – being a child actor.
Yeah. I mean, I deeply wanted it when I was a child.
Yeah. But I read this place where you said you, even when you were a kid, you would write your own material. Didn't trust other people's stuff or something? Was that what it was about?
I think I actually wasn't a good child actor. I think I was, I would take these acting classes and I remember, I think I just wasn't good at it. I think I was adorable enough. I just don't think I was a good actor. Because I remember taking all these classes, and there was one teacher who was on This American Life story I did, but I took him for years and still didn't get any parts. Like that's how not good I was at it. And but I remember like when I was like 9 or 10, being in this class with him, and then one of the exercises was like write your own monologue, I think. And then when I did that, he was like, that's what you got to do all the time. Like he was like, it was kind of like this like Woody Allen kind of monologue I did. And not that I was Woody Allen or anything, but it was that, I'm sure it was like that level of neuroses. And then and I remember him being like, that was when he like really perked up. And then I would and so then I would write stuff all the time. But and even before that, I was like writing plays when I was in elementary school that I would like put on for my school.
Huh. So
like, I remember doing a whole production, and that I think was very controlling. Like I insisted on being the director.
A whole production of what was the play?
Like I wrote a play.
Yeah.
When I was in third grade, like in class one day, but it wasn't for the. I didn't go to like an arts school or anything like that.
Right.
And then I wrote it, and then like I think it like fell off my desk, and then like they noticed it, and then we put it on for the whole like a whole production in my elementary school with third graders. But I was the director, and I remember being very very bossy about it, and like I couldn't type until like my like mom had to like type it out, and I was like I remember having a lot of demands.
Do you think about your part, the role you play on Mystery Show, as do you see that as a character in some way? I mean, detective / reporter, but you're writing, you're performing it on some level too. I mean, so how do you think about that? Is it a character in some way? Is it different from the real Starlee? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's a bit of a character. Like, I think she's me. Yeah. Like, when you hear me talking to Dennis or Tom, that's very much me.
Right.
You know, that's how I am. But then there's always written parts. And I think it's all me, but without any of the other stuff. You know what I mean? Like it's been really challenging figuring out what the line is, because it is a character, but it's also all totally true. You know, and that's also the thing where I've like tried to figure out how you separate it from like it's how it is also different from This American Life to me when I'm doing it. So yeah, I'm very very I keep that it, I'm really focused on that.
Were you surprised at all about the reaction to Mystery Show? I mean, a lot of people are talking about it. It's super popular right now. Did that at all surprise you?
Yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, you just can't anticipate what's gonna happen and what it's gonna feel like. You know what I mean? Like, I guess what surprised me more was just how it felt. Like, you know, like before you make something, I had this idea for the show before podcasts were getting popular in the way that they are now. I mean, I know there's been a lot of popular podcasts before this, but, you know, definitely I feel like the post-serial world of podcasts is very is noticeable. Yeah. I notice it. And so even though I knew the show was coming out kind of like in that post-serial world, I didn't ever think and I'm not saying it's like as popular as serial or anything like that, but I feel that
it's pretty popular.
Yeah, but I'm saying like I feel like I guess what surprises me most is how it feels. Like I was making a lot of the episodes before the show came out. Like I was working on them and working on the mysteries. But then there were parts that I was still working on once the show came out, and it felt very different to be working on it once the show existed. You know, like when you actually realize people are listening and waiting for it. If anything, that just made me want to like be even more fastidious and more care and take more care with it, because it felt like, you know, like I didn't want to let people down.
Yeah. I think the thing that I wondered about was whether the pace of something like this is sustainable or if that's going to drive you crazy. Because like I remember thinking, like I would check my feed. So after Source Code, Cotter didn't come for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
I was like, man, when's this thing coming? Which probably is a good thing in some ways, but I'm thinking maybe this one just took a little bit longer. But I'm wondering how the burden of that, people like, come on, Starley, let's go. We need another one. And does that, like, do you worry about that?
Yeah, I mean, totally. I mean, I have to say, the people who listen, at least the listeners who reach out to me, have been. They're really nice. Like, they're really, really nice. Like, I would get tweets from people saying, make sure you're getting enough sleep, rest. You know, we're like, we want you to, like, we'll wait. We just want it to be good. We understand. Like, it was really surprising. And I really appreciated it. Like, that's not just saying that. Like, I was very touched by that. But I feel, and with Cotter, like it took a long time because it was a really long episode.
Yeah.
And it was 77 minutes, Columbo length, and and it was like so many different parts. Like there was so much tape and so much writing, because that wasn't about. It wasn't about like, we haven't solved it. You know, it was actually like putting the episode together takes a really long time. But that's also the thing about the character, right? Because you also don't want to. Like I really want this world to be all to be immersive, right? So I don't want to. It's hard to decide when to like announce things, because then it's kind of like breaking out of it too, you know, and that's what I find hard. I find hard kind of juggling those two things. Like, how much do you talk about? Not because I don't want to talk about it, but only because I want to protect how the world of the show feels when you're listening.
Yeah. Starley Kine is with us. Her podcast, of course, called Mystery Show. We have links to it on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We need to take another quick break, and we'll be back for some final thoughts in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, Starley Kine is with us. We're talking about her podcast called Mystery Show. She's joining us from the studios of NPR in New York City. So people who listen to this show, Radio West, know of Trent Harris because he lives here in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
They may not know. He's kind of a friend of yours. You have hung out with him or do?
I mean, I hung out with him when he's come to New York, yeah. He's great.
Yeah.
I
actually want to play a clip from a story you did about the Beaver Trilogy, because we've had Trent Harris on talking about, and I just wanted to get your, I think it's interesting. I think Trent's really interesting. There's a documentary out about the Beaver Trilogy and about Trent Harris. It was at Sundance, and you did a story about this, and what I think is interesting about it is you're trying to get something out of him. You're trying to get him to really tell the story behind how he feels about the beaver. And maybe we should set this up.
Mm-hmm.
People who are unaware, Trent Harris, local filmmaker, really eccentric, funny guy, and he stumbles upon years ago this amazing man in the parking lot of the television station where he's working. And long story short, he does this talent show in Beaver, Utah, and he plays Olivia Newton-John, and it freaks people out. And the long of the short, I mean, Trent has done like three films about this now.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, the kid, tries to kill himself. So you're doing this program, this show for This American Life, this conversation with Trent about this. We talk a little bit about that because you're trying to get him to say what how he feels about all of that.
Well, yeah, because, well, so in the Beaver trilogy, the Beaver trilogy is, the first one is a documentary of the real kid.
Right.
The second two are remakes of that documentary.
Yeah.
And the second one, the middle one, which is Sean Penn, an undiscovered Sean, just starting out as an actor, Sean Penn.
Yeah.
It's kind of like almost shot for shot remake. Like everything's the same, except for the very end, the character tries to kill himself, like puts a gun, like almost shoots himself. And then in the third one, it's like more of a movie. It's a much longer, like feature length movie. And Crispin Glover plays the kid, and it's all the same. I mean, it's in that one he also tries to kill himself, and then he doesn't kill himself, and he rides off into the sunset.
Yeah.
But the obvious difference that was between the real one and the two reenactments was that there was this attempted suicide, and so I wanted to know why Trent had put that in the fictional versions.
Yeah, I want to play this moment. What you got him to talk about it, but he didn't really want to. What do you remember about that part?
In real life, doing it, you mean?
Yeah.
I remember knowing that there was something else that he wasn't telling me, and I guess that's like my most Columbo moment of all, honestly. This seems like that might have been when I really reached my Columbo-ness. But I knew there was something else. I mean, it had to be something else. And I remember wanting it. And I remember when we had this conversation after, like when I think what you're about to play happened, it was another moment where I knew as soon as it happened that it was a moment, you know?
You know, again, I'm very, very reluctant to talk about what is going on in his mind or to speculate that way. I don't think it's fair.
I mean, but it seems kind of more about you, though. You know, it seems more about...
If you are asking me, and I think you're trying to, if I feel guilty about anything that has happened... The answer to that is yes. Of course, I do feel guilty about things. I feel guilty about putting myself and my needs above other people's needs, above his needs. You know, I wasn't appreciative of that and sensitive to that. And for that, I've always felt guilty. And there you have it. That's why I keep making this damn thing over and over again. Now can we quit?
I like that moment.
There's a moment right after that, my reaction to that, which is actually also like what I remember very well, because I like don't know quite what to do with myself. Like we then have to still, like we're still talking.
Yeah.
And we both kind of realize that he said it. And so, and I feel like that was something I learned a lot from This American Life. You leave that moment in.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Even
though it seems like kind of awkward and you're not sure, but that's the real moment, right? I guess.
Yeah. The whole thing. And then, like, and letting it go a little long, you know, and making sure that, because that's how you feel that you're actually in a conversation, like as a listener. I always know, like, it's funny, like there's certain tape, like all this tape, that everything I've just listened to, I've laughed at the same moments here in the studio as I did on tape.
Right.
And I never know, like it's every single time, and I never know I'm gonna laugh in the tape when it happens, and it's like synced up.
Yeah. Do you get a sense that the show, Mystery Show, is changing in some way? You know, I don't know if evolving is the right way to put it, but do you get a sense that it's changing?
I think, on one hand, like I think the fact, I think I always wanted each episode to try to be, like I said, like to be kind of true to what that mystery is.
Yeah.
So I think hopefully, I don't know if it's evolving. And I mean, so in that regard, I don't know if it's evolving because I think I want them to feel different. But I feel like my understanding of it is evolving. Hmm. Like I feel like with the case number six, like when I was writing it, I felt like I had like the most. It felt like the most instinctual understanding I'd had of like, I guess, this character.
Wow.
The whole time. Like, it came – I mean, once – it took a while for the writing to come, but then once it did, I was like, oh, it was starting to make it's really interesting to me. It's really interesting to me, like, thinking about it. And I like that. That's what I like about it. I like that it's – I feel like I want to just keep switching it up, too, you know? I want it to be I guess it's not evolving as much as I just want it to feel. I want there to be a variety, and I want them to feel really rich and unique. Even I want to each other, but also cohesive. Like, it's really important to me how they all go together.
Yeah. In the first episode, you mentioned that one day you may get to D.B. Cooper. Like, did you mean it? Are you actually thinking about that?
I do actually mean it. I mean, out of all of them, like, I don't think I ever want to find Amelia Earhart, honestly. it doesn't appeal to me as much as D.B. Cooper is. He is really everything you want in a mystery, mm-hmm. And it's a perfect mystery because there's like so little information too, so you can project so much onto it. I wanted Don Draper to be D.B. Cooper so badly. Like I really like D.B. Cooper. So out of any of the classic mysteries, that would be the one. But I don't know. Like, I would have to either really find him or figure out a way where there's something that I am bringing to it that has not been brought to it before.
Yeah. Starley Kine, her newest project is a mystery show from Gimlet. You can get a link to it on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. She joined us from New York City. Carly, congratulations, and thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Carly's fine, too.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
Carly Stein. You've ever been called that, by the way?
I've been called Stanley. And I get a lot of Starley Klein, for sure.
Starley, thanks.
Bye.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, the show produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.